So we have a bunch of great speakers from the Chicago Public Library Maker Lab tonight, but first we're going to kick things off with a veteran of this show who is such an amazing person. He's an essayist, he's a comedian, all-around great dude. This is Mike Gifford.
Wow, we're doing it, everybody. Hi, I'm Mike Gifford. Does this go up? Maybe. Let's see. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you all. I'd first like to thank the staff of the Maker Lab here at the Chicago Public Library for having us here to speak this evening. That's pretty good. Yay. It is my, right? It's my strong belief that libraries are sacred ground. Thusly, I've been asked by my mother to apologize in advance for anything I'm going to say while I'm here. The late great scholar Professor Richard Altuck wrote, "A scholar must not only be capable of hard, often totally resultless work, he must actually relish it." Our theme for this evening's program is making. Making, I thought. As a noun? Making? It sounds like lewd behavior during the Truman administration. Don't tell Lois, but I saw her son Johnny making it with Sarah Jane in the back of their new Studebaker. How vulgar! So now I find myself in one of the great bastions of education and learning in the world, having to give a talk inspired by making. What to do? Well, I went for a walk in a cemetery. For inspiration. Graceland Cemetery, to be precise. And this past Sunday afternoon, I spent hours wandering around that magnificent macabre park. As one makes their way to the pond at Graceland Cemetery, it's like wandering back into the most elite parts of the Gilded Age of America. You see names like George Pullman, John Root, Louis Sullivan, Potter Palmer, David Adler, Marshall Field, Philip Armour, William Wallace Kimball, Charles Wacker, Cyrus McCormick, and on that island, the great Daniel Burnham himself. Their tombs are massive monuments that serve as testaments to their legacies. These are the industrialists, financiers, architects who rebuilt Chicago after the Great Fire and in doing intentionally set out to make a template for what a 20th century city should be. So a lot of rich dead white guys who made stuff. Sidebar. By all accounts of professional and personal standards, I have failed at life. Now, I may only be 33, but it's over. It's done. That should be clear to everyone who can see me. And if you can't see me, use your imagination. My voice says it all. I'm like a guy wandering around in a dark cave of treasure, holding a flashlight with no batteries in one hand, and in the other, a bucket with quite a big hole. Well, mutatis mutandis. The more things change, the more they stay the same. So, I've always been drawn to failure, and those others who, too, revel in its muddy waters. Now, I know in our fast, hyper-capitalized society, we're supposed to aim for the stars, as long as those stars have lots of zeros behind their eternal glow, that we've already forgotten because the only thing of consequence is making lots of money. Then, maybe you too can build a monstrous building, put your name on it, and maybe, if you're lucky, even run for president of the United States. How cool! Well, not exactly my American dream. I do think I found an American dream once in Pleasant Hill, Missouri, while vacationing with my parents this past fall. I'm 33. Okay, so We had a little break in the vacation around Kansas City, and I am really into sleight of hand card magic. Now, don't hold your breath. I can't deal cards to save my life, but I'm really into the history of sleight of hand magic. And there's this fellow named Di Vernon, who is one of the fathers of 20th century sleight of hand card magic. He's famously known as being the man who fooled Houdini. Not really all that much to brag about, because Houdini was an escape artist and a really crappy sleight-of-hand magician. But I digress. Di Vernon used that template and was obsessed with learning all he could about sleight-of-hand card magic. And during the 1920s, he heard lore of a man who could do the center deal. Now, what's the center deal? Well, the center deal is whenever you can deal from the center of the deck. But card sharps, or a card sheet, thought that this move was impossible. Because who could possibly do that? Well, Alan Bill Kennedy could. Who? Yeah, drunk guy, unknown, lived in Pleasant Hill, Missouri, outside of Kansas City. What? Who's this guy? Well, through a weird chain of events, Di Vernon made his way outside of Kansas City and found this man, Alan Bill Kennedy. But it took him a little trick. You see, people weren't willing to give up where Mr. Kennedy lived because he was a notorious gambler, and people in those towns kept their mouths shut. And Mr. Vernon came to town dressed up in a very nice suit only a few weeks after a couple of mobsters from Kansas City had whacked a couple of guys and dumped their bodies in Pleasant Hill. So they weren't so game to chat. Well, Mr. Vernon was about ready to give up whenever he saw a little girl standing outside of a store eating an ice cream cone. He said, "Excuse me, little girl, but do you like that ice cream?" And she said, "Yeah, I do, mister. Well, if you tell me where Mr. Kennedy lives, I'll buy you another ice cream cone." She goes, "Oh, Mr. Kennedy, he lives right up on that hill." And there, Di Vernon learned how to do the center deal, thus changing American card magic forever in its own little way. That's pretty cool. So I drug my parents down the middle of bum nowhere in Missouri to see this place. But I didn't know anybody. I didn't know where we were. I knew nothing about this. Just a bunch of rednecky stuff, I figured. But why not? So I get out of the car. My mother is frustrated because she doesn't want to be there. My father is annoyed because he has no idea what we've done, but they're humoring me because that's me. And I'm 33 years old and I'm vacationing with my parents. So we get out, and I go up to the local historical society. I knock on the door, and there's this fellow, Bob Kennedy, no relation. And through Bob, my parents and I met Bob's wife. We drove around Pleasant Hill. We learned all about Alan Kennedy. He even took us to his grave, which was pretty cool. And I found out that I was only the second person since Di Vernon visited in 1923, I believe, to have actually pursued this man and visited his grave. That's pretty cool. End of sidebar. So, there I was this past Sunday, surrounded by a bunch of staggeringly opulent monuments for a bunch of rich, dead, white guys. Well, those fellows did some important things for society as a whole, but also were responsible for some pretty horrible injustices. Yet, with all that history, to most folks in America, they have the relevance of a cobweb in a corner. A bunch of marble temples honoring a whole bunch of nothing that nobody even remembers. Good or bad, it is what it is. Like my 11th grade English teacher, Mrs. Sands, said, "We're all just legends in our own minds." Modernity certainly has provided benefits, but modern industrial values have caused folks to work so hard to make the perfect life for themselves that they forget to live one of their own, let alone truly sharing a life with others, perhaps? So, again, I quote Richard Olteck, "A scholar must not only be capable of hard, often totally resultless work, he must actually relish it." Well, Let's all relish those resultless moments a lot more, because those are the memories you'll truly cherish when you look back at the life you have made. Thank you.
Yeah. Mike Gifford, everybody. Oh my gosh. So far from a failure, Mike, I love you. You're such a wonderful person. Before I introduce the next speaker, I want to read this amazing tweet that is so perfectly dovetails with your story that our friend Eric Siegel just tweeted like 2 hours ago. Shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll start at the very bottom of a new industry at age 40. God bless you, Eric. That's some real...